From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Today, the green threat and two debates. First, a general look at who a vote for Ralph Nader is really for. Then, are the Greens greener than Gore? All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. With unapproved corn already showing up in the food supply, the biotechnology industry asked the government yesterday to temporarily allow its use for human consumption. The industry said the move was urgently needed to head off further recalls and plant shutdowns. In 1998, the government rejected Aventis's original request to approve the corn for human consumption, approving it only for animal feed and industrial uses because the government's scientific advisors were uncertain whether it was an allergen. A protein special to the corn contains a characteristic of food allergens that makes it degrade slowly in the digestive system. The EPA is deciding the matter rather than the Food and Drug Administration or the Agriculture Department because the corn is engineered to produce its own pesticide. EPA officials say they didn't expect to make a decision for several weeks at the earliest. Tens of thousands of people poured into chaotic streets and converged on the center Abidjan Ivory Coast, overthrowing the military ruler, General Robert Guay, one day after he declared himself the winner of a disputed presidential election. The whereabouts of General Guay, who seized power last year in a Christmas Eve coup in one of the few African countries never to have experienced military rule, are unclear. With the popular revolt, a fierce political battle now looms. The general's main opponent in the election held on Sunday, Laurent Gbagbo, declared himself president yesterday, and on state television last night, the Army Chief of Staff, General Soumaila Diabakate, said the armed forces were now behind Gbagbo. In Yugoslavia, the president, Vojislav Kostunica, promised a summit of regional leaders he'll work to end Balkan tensions, said, after years of war under his predecessor. Some called for the former president, Slobodan Milosevic, still at large in Belgrade, to be handed over for a war crimes tribunal. Zimbabwe's Mugabe threatened to arrest Ian Smith and other white ex-leaders for atrocities against blacks in the 1970s guerrilla war. The opposition filed an impeachment motion but lacks votes in parliament. Meanwhile, Sierra Leone peacekeeping was thrown into disarray as Jordan began withdrawing its 1,800-strong contingent, charging that rich nations aren't doing their share. India's force of 3,200 had earlier announced a pullout. A UN global warming report found a discernible human influence on rising temperatures, and the Earth is likely to get hotter than previously predicted. The report is likely to influence the debate significantly. And that's some of the news at this hour.
Ta-da.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Suddenly, Ralph Nader is no longer being ignored. The media ignored the Green Party presidential candidate's super rallies that have drawn more than 10,000 people in places like Seattle and Portland, Oregon, New York, Minneapolis, and Boston. 10,000 people and more who actually paid admission all across the country. It was virtually uncovered when Nader was threatened with arrest when he had tried to attend two of the presidential debates, the first one in Boston and the last one in St. Louis. His campaign was not worth even a soundbite to even make him recognizable to most Americans throughout most of his campaign, except that his name is a household name. But the Green Party candidate's recent rise to 5% in national polls has put the major media outlets on alert. With Gore and Bush in a dead heat in the polls just 2 weeks shy of the election, headlines yesterday state that Ralph Nader may spoil Vice President Al Gore's chances to win the presidency. The Democratic Party sees Nader as a major threat now to Al Gore and at least a half a dozen normally Democratic states. That fear has prompted a vigorous campaign across the country by the Democratic Party and its allies to dissuade liberal voters from supporting Nader. Even some of Ralph Nader's supporters are threatened by the close race between Bush and Gore. In California, where the race is very close, Nader supporters pulled ads promoting him there out of concern that votes for him could cost the state. Nader's primary goal in the election is to get 5% of the popular vote, a threshold that would qualify the Green Party for federal financing in the 2004 election. The months-long argument between liberals and liberals is now the question being covered by the media and the question that we're looking at today. Is a vote for Ralph Nader really a vote to help put Bush in the White House? Today, we're going to look at two aspects of this issue. One is the general question, and then we're going to look at Gore, Nader, and Bush's environmental record. We're joined by Toby Moffitt, a former congressional representative of Connecticut. Moffitt co-founded the Connecticut Citizen Action Group with Nader in the 1970s, and the two worked together on environmental and other causes. Today, Moffitt is working with Democrats towards a different goal. He's working with them to help elect Al Gore. We're also joined on the phone by Barbara Ehrenreich. She is a writer, activist, and novelist who appears in publications ranging from Mother Jones to Z to Time. And she is an outspoken Ralph Nader supporter. We welcome you both to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
It's good to, and Barbara Ehrenreich, are you there as well? It's good to have you with us. Well, why don't we start out with Toby Moffitt. Former Congressman, can you tell us why you're supporting Al Gore?
Sure. I'm supporting Al Gore for a couple of reasons. One, On the positive side, I had the distinction, which I'm very proud of having been with Ralph Nader when he created the Citizen Action Network and movement in the early 70s, and the Public Interest Research Group movement, the campus-based movement. There was a two-pronged effort at that time, and Don Ross went off to set up a pioneering campus-based operation in New York, and I went to Connecticut, back home to Connecticut, where Ralph and I are both from, to set up the Connecticut Citizen Action Group as a model, which was then replicated. But I also have the distinction of having been with Al Gore on the Commerce Committee in the House, and reading Barbara's very well-written piece in the New York Times today, where she says it's not my fault if Gore has refused to stand up for populist principles. I mean, I really think maybe something's being missed here, because Al has been a really great and determined fighter for a very long time on a lot of the very same issues that Ralph Nader cares about. And I saw that. It wasn't just a press release here and a rally there, but day-to-day work on the Commerce Committee, where he went after toxic waste producers, consumer ripoff artists, and so forth. And he's been doing that ever since. I'm not a DLC person, a Democratic Leadership Council, the centrist group. I've never been to their events. I don't take part in any of their things. But I disagree with Clinton and Gore on several things. But if anyone can't see the difference between Bush and Gore, and that's the second reason I'm supporting Gore, the idea that anybody would help George Bush get into the White House is so deplorable. And to say, well, it's not our fault, you know, if Bush gets elected, it's not our fault. Well, the math is pretty simple. If you look at Oregon, Washington State, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, regardless of what Al has failed to do, let's just put that aside for a moment. Regardless of what he's failed to do to rally the troops or this or that, the fact of the matter is Ralph Nader is going to be the one or two reasons why George Bush gets elected, if he gets elected. He'll have a front row seat at the inauguration if he wants it. I can't imagine he would want it. But the Republicans are just grinning from ear to ear because Ralph is helping them so much, and they know it. And everybody knows it. The math is not complicated.
Barbara Ehrenreich, why are you supporting Ralph Nader?
Well, for the sort of simple, obvious, straight-from-the-heart reason that he's the candidate who most represents what I believe. Now, I'm not 100%. There are ways I wish he were more of a feminist. There are a lot of things I would like to see. But he is the one who comes closest to what I want to hear from a candidate. In fact, the kinds of things I say when I talk to people around the country. I want to take issue with Toby's math a little bit here, because there's something he should be aware of, and other Gore supporters should be aware of, that contradicts what he just said, and that is that it does not look like Ralph Nader just takes votes from Gore, or even predominantly takes votes from Gore. The latest Reuters MSNBC poll shows Nader drawing only 25% of his support from Democrats. That is, people who normally vote Democratic. The rest is coming from independents and oddly, I thought, Republicans. So this is not just a left candidate who's taking left votes away from the Democrats. This is a candidate with a very broad populist appeal whose effect on either candidate we can't quite predict.
Toby Moffitt.
Well, you know, Barbara, with all due respect, this is not John McCain, okay? I mean, John McCain clearly was going to take Republican votes if he went out and did what Ralph is doing. Barbara, I totally, totally agree with trying to get the candidate, as you said, the one who comes closest to what I believe. I think that's what you said. I think the place to do that is in the primaries. I mean, there's no question that this Nader effort is aimed primarily at, and almost exclusively at, the Democratic Party. No one in the world expects the Republican Party, at this moment or in any foreseeable future, to become anything resembling a progressive party. The only chance to impact the two major parties is to influence the Democrats. And that's what this is about. And if that's what it's about, Ralph should have had the integrity and the honesty to go into the primaries. I mean, Bobby Kennedy went into the primaries, and I supported him. I'm showing my age here, but Gary Hart went into the primaries. Bradley went into the primaries. That's what one does. one does not throw a grenade in the middle of the room here as we're about to get a Scalia-Thomas-dominated court. And I don't think there's any doubt that that's what we would have. George Bush says that Scalia and Thomas are his favorite justices. This is not the time to do this. I'm not suggesting this of you, Barbara, but there's such an elitist ring to this whole thing. You don't see poor people advocates. The victims of a Bush administration are not at the potential victims are not at the Nader rallies in any large number. They are supporting Gore. Kwasi Mfumi, the head of the NAACP, Julian Bond, Kate Michelman, on behalf of pro-choice women, they're not out there for Nader. If he were filling any kind of void here in this debate, some huge void, things that weren't being said about the pharmaceutical companies, that weren't being said about greenhouse gas emissions, if he were doing that, don't you think that Brent Blackwelder, the head of Friends of the Earth, would be supporting Ralph instead of supporting Gore? Wouldn't Julian Bond, doesn't Julian Bond have integrity? Wouldn't Julian Bond be supporting Ralph instead of Gore? It's not there. They're not doing it. The most respected progressives in America are behind Gore. Some of them are holding their noses. I know that. But I don't think that's the point here.
Well, I don't even know where to start on that, Toby. So you've said so much in a little bit. I don't think the best thing to do here is to match the list of supporters, although I think you do have to acknowledge that Nader has some supporters that are just as honorable people, progressive people. I'm thinking of Cornel West and Randall Robinson and Howard Zinn and Francis Fox Piven, who, for example, is an outspoken advocate of the poor in this country. Now, this does not break down quite as easily as you would like to put it. I really do have to say I flinch a little bit at that elitist charge. And I've heard this before as a Nader supporter, that it's just sort of an upper-middle-class luxury to say, oh, I'm going to vote for Nader because that'll make me feel better, et cetera, and more principled and so on. But that the poor are the ones who will suffer. Let me note two things. One is that the poor are probably the most alienated group of voters in the country. There was a very telling front-page New York Times article a few weeks ago about Dixie County in Florida, which is a county which is a very, very low voter turnout. They don't vote, and they're very poor people. And there were quotes from these people saying, look, these candidates, we can't tell the difference between them, Gore and Bush. Now, I would not say that personally. I can make the fine visual discrimination and see that there are differences between them. But a lot of people, I would estimate about 20% of our population really is poor if we had an adequate measure of poverty. And they don't see the difference. As for the reality of it, one of the biggest factors pushing me away from the Democrats in both 96, see, I didn't vote for Clinton in 96, so my vote is not being taken from the Democrats here. I voted for Nader then, too. But one of the biggest factors was welfare reform, which was an attack on poor women and their children, unprecedented in the viciousness of the propaganda that went along with it. And it's just beginning to turn out, and Francis Piven and I are doing research on this, with devastating consequences. Food pantries all over the country reporting being maxed out. Homeless shelters turning people away. An increase, a sharp spike in infant mortality, African-American infant mortality in that very thoroughly welfare reformed city of Milwaukee. This is terrible news, not totally unexpected, but what makes it really, really impossible for me to think of Gore as a candidate who in any way represents the down and out is that he's going around boasting about his role in welfare reform. So please don't bring in the poor as the, as your excuse for why people should support Gore. That is one of the biggest reasons why a lot of us are truly alienated from the DLC-dominated Clinton-Gore-Lieberman Democratic Party.
And the DLC being the Democratic Leadership Council.
It's a conservative faction, which has taken over the Democratic Party. This is not my party anymore. It's their party.
Toby Moffitt, we just have to break for stations to identify themselves, but we are going to come back for your response. We'll continue with that, and then we're going to be taking on the issue of Al Gore, Ralph Nader, and George Bush's environmental record. Today we're talking about the Nader factor, the Green Party, and how it is playing into this presidential election. Toby Moffitt, former Connecticut Congress member who used to work with Ralph Nader supporting Al Gore, and writer and activist Barbara Ehrenreich staying with Ralph Nader. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Back in a minute.
Just for the view, I took my boyfriend's last name for something to do. I took advice, yeah, now I regret it. I took my time.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman. As we take on the issue of Ralph Nader or Al Gore, we're talking to former Connecticut Congressmember Tony Moffitt and Toby Moffitt and Barbara Ehrenreich, who is writer and activist, writes for such publications as Mother Jones, Z Magazine, and Time. Barbara Ehrenreich raising the question of who speaks for the poor and who serves them. And former Congressmember Moffitt, you wanted to respond.
Thank you. This is the elitist part of the Nader thing that I was referring to, with all due respect. People saying, well, Al Gore really doesn't care about the poor, and Ralph Nader does. The fact of the matter is, and the record's really clear on this, over the past 25 years, Al Gore has spent probably 50 times more time on behalf of advocacy for the poor and representatives of the poor than Ralph Nader has. Ralph Nader is not known as an advocate for poor people. I'm not suggesting he's not genuinely concerned about it, but it's a recent addition to his resume. But number two, the elitist part of it is this. If Barbara were absolutely correct that poor people really are upset about the choices here, why would Jesse Jackson, why would Representative Maxine Waters, Congressman John Lewis, a veteran of the Civil Rights Campaign, Kwasi Mfume, the head of the NAACP, Julian Bond, why would these people be spending virtually full time right now working for Al Gore in the most determined way imaginable? Again, the answer is this. They know what the stakes are. They see the difference between Bush and Gore. I would have voted, Barbara, against the welfare reform bill, and I think you would probably expect that of anybody that calls himself a progressive. Not all of them did, but the fact of the matter is this is a Republican Congress. It's a Republican majority. This is not a progressive country at its core. You and I both know that. I think the listeners of Pacifica are painfully aware of that. And let's not turn this thing into who is the perfect progressive or how can we get the perfect progressive government. This culture is conservative, much more conservative at its core than it is progressive, and I understand that the genuine interest and determination on the part of the Green Party to try to change that, and I share a whole lot of that. But now is not the time to try to do that. The stakes are just too high.
Barbara Ehrenreich.
Well, I never know what to say to arguments about now is not the time for this or that. In the 1970s, when the second wave of feminism started up, we were always being told by men on the left, now is not the time. Don't do this woman thing because we need to have a mighty working class movement or something before we can do that. I never know how you tell what time when it's time to do what. But I would say, I understand, although I'm upset by relative progressives like Jesse Jackson, although Jesse Jackson, remember, is now in his Wall Street phase, who have become avid, well, not that avid, I would say. See, I heard Jesse Jackson speak in L.A. at the time of the Democratic Convention, and it was a kind of a sad speech. What you get a lot from a lot of these Gore supporters is, look, this is the best we can do right now to fend off Bush. It is not a happy endorsement at all. I think what we're saying, those of us who are supporting Nader, which seems to be a growing part of the population, is it's time to start a movement for genuine democracy in this country. I'm not willing to agree with you, Toby, that this is just a conservative country. We've got to settle for a conservative Democrat. That's the best we could ever do.
Barbara, I said it's
and
more
partly
conservative
because we have an electoral system that almost rules out third parties, makes it very difficult to start them, that keeps other candidates out of the debates. The whole thing is rigged, and we're saying it's time to start a democracy movement in the United States, just as there were democracy movements in the totalitarian countries in the late 1980s. We need democracy, too. We need a real choice. We need a political environment in which a broad range of voices can be heard. And we're starting that movement now.
We're talking to Barbara Ehrenreich, a writer and activist, and Toby Moffett, former congressional representative of Connecticut and co-founder of Connecticut Citizen Action Group with Ralph Nader in the 1970s. But Congressman Moffett, or former Congressmember Moffett, you took a different route after that and became a vice president of Monsanto Corporation for International Government Affairs. Now, I think in speaking to a lot of people at the big super rallies for Nader, this is exactly what they are deeply concerned about. People who may in the past have been active on the kinds of issues that they're involved in, but then move to, for example, the Monsanto Corporation or where you are today working with the corporate lobby firm Washington, Higgins, McGovern & Smith.
Well, actually, there's no such firm. I happen to be renting space here, but let me talk to the Monsanto issue. And I don't think this should ever be about where we work and what we do if, in fact, we are supporting progressive principles and working in progressive coalitions. I mean, if we're going to take the point of view that anybody who works in a corporation is automatically prohibited from having any progressive credentials, I think that's just ludicrous. I mean, then you'll surely have a 0.5% of the population in your movement. As far as Monsanto is concerned, Bob Shapiro was the first Democrat to head that, what was then an old chemical company. He was the first Jew to be head of that that Midwestern company, the first real environmentalist, in my view. The fact that we broke ranks from the business roundtable on the Kyoto issue, the fact that we were the first ones into the microcredit summit movement, and the head of the corporate piece of that, the fact that we gave up soft money along with we renounced soft money along with four or five other companies. I mean, I think I had a little bit to do with that as the VP in charge of that stuff. And I think most people, including most Pacifica listeners, would say, yeah, it's a pretty good idea to have people on the inside pushing for those kinds of things. We lost a lot of battles. But in a corporation, you know, it's all this great, big, gigantic fight. It was my first and only time in a big corporation. The fights are about shareholder value and how you define that. And some of us wanted to define it more broadly and longer term than the quarter-to-quarter business. So, I mean, does that in some way, how does that affect me with regard to Gore? It really doesn't. I mean, if I were teaching a sixth-grade class in Bridgeport, Connecticut, where one of my favorite Pacifica stations is, I have the same level of enthusiasm or Al Gore.
But Toby, the problem I have with
what Barbara said is, and I have enormous respect for her, by the way, but the problem I have is this. You know, to say, well, Toby, you and these other progressive Gore supporters, you always say this now is not the time. Well, let me tell you what's wrong with this moment. One of the main things that's wrong with this moment is if you read the People for the American Way report called Courting Disaster, and I urge the listeners to get this report if you're at all in doubt about how you're going to vote. That report, case by case, and I'm sure Barbara's read it, case by case, it goes through the past several years of 5-4 votes, the 5-4 decision to overturn the Violence Against Women Act, 5-4 decisions affecting workers' right to organize, 5-4 decisions affecting the environment and toxic waste, and on and on and on. 5-4 decisions affecting people with disabilities. 6-3, as we all know, Roe v. Wade. All it takes is getting Bush elected, and you're going to have an enormous change in American life as it affects people who are affected by those decisions, often the most powerless people. And so that's one of the main things that's wrong with this moment. If you want me to answer the question, why not
now? That'll be wrong with any moment. As I've said before, until we have a Supreme Court full of pro-choice teenagers, people are going to say, no, you can't leave the party. You can't, you can't do anything. You've got to go along with what the party says. I didn't want to get into your Monsanto connections and your current role as a corporate consultant, but I do want to say one thing about that. Please don't hurl around the word elitist at the people you're disagreeing with on this coordinator business when that is where you are standing.
I just think that is really bad faith. You're a very
smart
person. You know
personally,
that I'm talking about
I mean, I don't want to hear that word elitist again. Gore has not been an advocate for the poor, the working class, the lower middle class, whatever, throughout his campaign. He may have been wonderful in the Commerce Committee, although I don't remember much public evidence of that at the time. But he has not campaigned that way. He has, and I think this is one of the good effects of Nader, is that Gore has occasionally, in little spasms, talked in rather, for me, too vague populist terms about the need to take on the insurance companies and the big oil companies and so on, but with not a lot of substance. And then he was undercut in doing that by Joe Lieberman's turning around and telling the Wall Street Journal that when Gore does talk like that, it's just rhetoric. That is just what he has to say to appeal to some people. Now, if you want Gore to win, I think it would be much better to spend your time with that candidate, telling that candidate how he could appeal to the people that Ralph Nader is now appealing to, or that George Bush is now appealing to, but particularly to those of us who are really, really disaffected with this process and don't feel ourselves represented by either candidate.
Well, Barbara, I don't think you'll be surprised to hear me say this, that I'm already doing that along with people that you know quite well, I assume, Bob Borsage, who was Jesse Jackson's campaign manager in 1988, Jeff Blum, who's one of the most respected citizen activists, citizen action leaders in America, and a whole host of people. We sit around a conference table and we do give our ideas and so forth and send them off to the campaign like a lot of citizens are doing. So to do anything less than that would be...
Right, but I think where you need to be jumping up and down and waving your arms is in those inner councils.
And with people, or him himself,
saying, you know, I don't want to see him lose, personally. I mean, my best result is that he wins and that Nader gets over 5%
right.
And that George Bush skulks off to back to Austin and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want Gore to win, please don't waste your energy on me and people like me, and I think a lot of Pacifica listeners. Spend your time trying to make Al Gore into a candidate who can really reach out to the disaffected Americans, who in fact are that 50%, include the 51% that won't even vote.
Well, you know, I think I don't entirely disagree with that, and I'm also focused on if Gore gets elected, how we keep him on a progressive track, which I'm sure you're interested in.
Well, keep is not the word I would use.
I also want to ask one last question. Then we're going to go to the environmental record of the two men. We'll be joined by a representative of the Sierra Club, as well as environmentalists against Gore. But the issue of strategy now, Toby Moffat, your attitude to the press that has excluded Nader, I mean, I think by anyone's criterion, for so long and now suddenly paying attention, were you critical of that?
Critical.
Of the exclusion of Nader, even with these historic super rallies he's having, I mean, the largest presidential candidate rallies, that he's hardly gotten any press, and now with the numbers going up, the way he's covered is in a sort of negative way. Look what he's taking from Gore.
Yeah, I don't think he's – do you think the coverage is entirely negative?
No, that he had not been covered as long
right.
and excluded from the debates.
That's right, and that's constantly a problem for – it's not just a Nader candidacy. It's a problem for a whole host of progressive movements.
And now the strategy of Gore, that since the percentage points are going up for Ralph Nader, to recruit a large group of people like Gloria Steinem, like Elizabeth Birch of the Human Rights Campaign, Melissa Etheridge, I guess they're all going to be together, a huge concert in Seattle.
That's right.
That strategy.
Yeah, well, I don't think – can anybody fault –
not faulting, but just asking about how it came together.
Well, look, I don't have anything to hide. I'm not getting paid by the campaign or anything. I can be about as honest as I could possibly be with you on this. I think that the campaign took too long to figure out that Ralph was going to be an issue and a challenge, much too long. And maybe that's because, you know, to a certain extent, the campaign was populated by the Democratic Leadership Council, more centrist people or whatever. And I and others certainly voiced our concern, our dismay about that during the summer. Clearly, this is a sort of a belated response, I think. I would not, however, say that the Al populist themes are something new. I mean, despite... Barbara said about, well, maybe he was good on the Commerce Committee, but I didn't see the publicity. Well, there was a lot of publicity, and there's a lot of material around, which I'd be happy to get you, about how populist he has been throughout his career. The earned income tax credit, which I think is a good thing, and I would assume you do, even though we share the view on welfare reform, Barbara, the earned income tax credit is very, very important to working poor people. You know more about this than I'll ever hope to know. Al was, in fact, very, very involved in that. Throughout his time in the Congress and in the Senate, and has been since as a defender and an advocate for that.
So, Barbara Ehrenreich, 30 seconds.
Okay, well, from my list of 10 reasons why I'm terribly disappointed in Gore, well, not even disappointed because I never had much faith in him, health care. We're not talking about national health care anymore. We're talking about the tiniest or a relatively tiny issue, that is prescription drugs on Medicare. Minimum wage, yes, it went up under Clinton Gore, but it's still a sub-poverty wage. Trade policy, major reason why an awful lot of union people are rejecting Gore and voting for Nader, because they've been sold out on trade policies that are hostile to working people worldwide. Well, I guess I've used up my 30 seconds.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you both for being with us. We're going to take up the issue of the environment in just a minute. Our guest, Barbara Ehrenreich, writer, activist with Mother Jones, Z, and Time, and Toby Moffat, who former congressman from Connecticut, recently Monsanto Corporation's vice president for international government affairs, worked with Ralph Nader, now campaigning for Al Gore. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
It's not easy being green.
listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Al Gore's challenge to Nader put Ralph Nader's campaign with the Green Party on the front pages in a way that the super rallies and decades of tireless consumer advocacy and corporate crime investigating and lobbying for environmental issues never did. Ralph Nader said yesterday he would welcome any public discussion or debate with Vice President Gore about environmental issues and the two candidates' environmental records. On Monday, when a reporter questioned Gore about Nader's greater appeal to voters' concerns with the environment, Gore responded, "I'll stack my record against anyone, including him." We're joined right now by Debbie Cease, the National Legislative Director of the Sierra Club, which is endorsing Al Gore, and Tim Hermack, President of the Native Forest Council. Debbie Cease, why are you supporting Al Gore?
Well, thank you for this opportunity. The Sierra Club has endorsed Al Gore because he has established a very, very good record on the environment. And we believe if he is elected president, he will be the single best environmental president we have ever had in this nation's history. He has fought hard for clean air. He has protected public lands. He's worked to strengthen our soot and smog standards to protect children's health. He's required the elimination of about 90% of the sulfur from gasoline. He's been instrumental in crafting new national monuments and working to fight sprawl. He's taken a stand on protecting our wild forests that is actually stronger than what the Forest Service has currently proposed. So we think he is both had a good record on the environment and would, in fact, make even greater achievements on the environment as president.
Tim Hermack of the Native Forest Council.
We're of the belief that almost everything that the Sierra Club has just said is false. I think if you look at his record, it's nothing but a trail of broken promises, green-sounding rhetoric, creating monuments that triple logging, like the Sequoia Monument in California, tripling logging in the three national forests, the Plumas, the Lawson, and the Shasta in Northern California, firing the Timber Theft Task Force when they identified Weyerhaeuser, 20 employees working for the federal government looking for theft in the national forest, the toxic waste incinerator in Ohio. It's hard to imagine he's protecting the Clean Air Act when he's signing up or approving permitting a toxic waste incinerator that's poisoning children. One in six trees in the Northwest National Forest that were standing when he took office are now cut down, and they plan to cut three out of every six trees. What Al Gore says and what Al Gore does are two entirely different things. Neither the Sierra Club nor the labor movement nor the entire environmental movement have been able to make Al Gore abide by his promises. It's hard to believe that after spending their currency and rewarding, condoning, and encouraging more broken promises and more puffery, that he will be any different in when he gets elected.
I don't think there's hardly a grain of credibility in what Tim has just said. I mean, the unfortunate truth is that what we have today is a choice between somebody who's going to be excellent on the environment, who, if you look at his record, you look at the reality of his record, you look at the positions he's taken, is going to be a very good environmental leader as president. And we have, in contrast to that, George W. Bush, who would arguably be the worst environmental president we've ever had, and we've had some pretty bad ones in the past. And that's where the choice is. One of these two people is going to be elected as president on November 7th.
Voting for evil is still getting evil. You can't have the
I don't
lesser
believe
evil.
That voting for Al Gore is voting for evil.
Debbie,
there is
anybody
a
can look
huge
up the record
difference
on the
between
Sequoia
both
Monument.
Positions.
It's been written in the New York Times. It's been written in the Sacramento Bee that the Sequoia Monument tripled logging for the next 3 years inside the newly created monument's boundaries. Now, the Sierra Club can apologize for Al Gore all day long. You can try to restrict the choice to a false choice of Gore or Bush. But I suggest you're never going to get an honest candidate who has a long record of public service if you refuse to support those candidates when they run. The Sierra Club has been wrong far more often than they've been right. The Sierra Club said never in a million years could Jesse Ventura win Minnesota. The Sierra Club said Harry Lonsdale, nobody could beat Mark Hatfield. And in spite of the Sierra Club's opposition, Lonsdale came within a hair of winning. Now, how many more times are you going to deny the record?
Well, again, this is not just the Sierra Club with Debbie Cease as a spokesman. The Sierra Club asked our chapters and our groups all across the country, do you want to get involved in this race? If you do, who do you want to endorse? The overwhelming choice was to endorse Al Gore. It was done with enthusiasm. It was done with eyes open. Now, clearly, we are not going to just sit back if we are so lucky as to elect Al Gore as president and say, oh, well, we're in our mother's arms now. We don't need to do another thing. Obviously, we are going to have to work, as one would with any politician, to make sure that he has the public support and the public demand to live up to his commitments. In fact, I believe if Ralph Nader were elected, one would have to do the same with him. I mean, Ralph Nader got people to join his campaign with a promise that he wasn't going to be a spoiler, that he wasn't going to campaign in places where the election between Gore and Bush was close, that he was, in fact, going to just raise issues. Now, let me finish here for a second, Tim. Tim, let me finish my point, and then you can respond to it.
Tell the truth.
I am telling the truth.
He did not make such a promise. It's on the record.
Well, according to his very supporters, who wrote him a letter just earlier this week, in fact, that is what he said. But the case is that he is now, having gone from saying that his attempt was not to keep Al Gore from being elected, he is now saying that, in fact, his goal is to elect George W. Bush and have a cold shower for the Democratic Party. Well, now that's a cold shower that I don't think the people of this country are ready for. A cold shower that is going to let asthmatic children deal with dirtier air as we have George W. Bush dealing with our clean air regulations the way he dealt with Texas. Texas now has surpassed L.A. as the smoggiest city. Houston has as the smoggiest city in the country. We can't afford to the cold shower that would allow George W. Bush to appoint five new Supreme Court justices. Justices that will be there during the rest of our lifetime. A Supreme Court modeled on Justice Antonin Scalia. Antonin Scalia, who has said he doesn't believe that citizens should have the right to sue polluters who are poisoning their backyard. Now, this is the kind of court that George W. Bush would appoint. We can't afford that. It's too big a consequence.
Don't deny it.
There is a difference between voting for a confirmation and appointing that
Joseph Lieberman was an original sponsor of Clarence Thomas.
I have absolute confidence that the Supreme Court that Al Gore and Joe Lieberman would appoint would be one that would uphold the values that I think both you and I share.
I don't think we share the same values. You're a Democratic political front group instead of an environmental advocacy.
No, I don't think that's the least bit true.
Take a look at your behavior.
I am looking at our behavior. Sierra Club.
You ran a
not
Democrat
only
in Oregon.
Candidate.
You guys opposed him. You supported
Sierra Club
Mark
not
Hatfield,
only endorses candidates for elected office. We also hold them accountable.
No,
and
you don't.
I can guarantee you that we will be out there holding George Bush accountable should we be so unfortunate as to have to deal with him. But that won't be enough to protect our environment.
Unfortunately for the Sierra Club today, the reason that David Brower resigned is this attitude that's now being expressed. David Brower has said repeatedly that in the first term of Clinton Gore, they did more harm to the environment, liberty, and justice for the citizens in this country than Reagan and Bush were allowed to do in 12 years.
Tim, this is just not true. Under Reagan and Bush, the
David
logging
Brower
of the national
said it,
forest
saying
doubled.
He's telling a fib, too?
Under Clinton,
NAFTA,
we dropped
gas,
it to the
WTO
lowest
welfare. Prison population. All
well, I have
things.
No knowledge of the prison population. I'm sorry about
Reagan
that. That's not an issue I can comment on.
Yes,
you're
is.
Listening to Debbie Cease, National Legislative Director of the Sierra Club, and Tim Hermack, President of the Native Forest Council. Tim Hermack.
Yes.
Your point on why you think Ralph Nader, what do you think of the argument that well, if you're voting for Ralph Nader, you're voting for George Bush, and whether George Bush is better or worse for the environment than Al Gore.
Well, one thing I think, you know, the thing you have to keep it in context is 80% of the child abuse in America doesn't happen by the bad guys. It happens by trusted friends and family members. And because some of our environmental movement looks at Clinton Gore as if they were friends and never holds them accountable, show me one criticism by the Sierra Club of Al Gore's broken promises. Show me one condemnation for allowing the toxic waste incinerator that both Clinton and Gore campaigned on and condemned when it was George Bush's, and then Al Gore personally told Bill Riley to permit it. Katie McGinty did the same thing. How can they say that they would hold them accountable? And if I'm saying a vote for Nader is a vote for Nader, the best way to vote for Bush or Bush's policies is to vote for Al Gore. They have far more issue substantive agreements than they have disagreements. They all agree with, both agree with the death penalty, Star Wars, military buildups, military interventions, prison population, stuff on crime, war on drugs, ending welfare as we know it, corporate welfare is okay. Gutting the Clean Air Act has been done by this administration when they refuse to adjust CAFE standards or incorporate SUVs.
No, wait a second. This administration refused to adjust CAFE standards.
This administration violated the international agreement that was to ban methyl bromide. This administration did it.
Tim, I'm sorry. You take the facts and you twist them. And, in fact, some of the facts
you
don't
just
twist. You
say that, but anybody can look it up on the Internet.
Well, look it up on the Internet if you like. But the Congress is the one that, in fact, for the last, I believe, 8 years has, in fact, had a rider that has prohibited the administration from doing anything on CAFE standards. Now, one of the things I think that we really
CAFE
have to look
standards.
Hard at, these are how far a car will go on a gallon of gas. One of the things we have to look at, though, is what's the next 4 years going to be like with George Bush at the helm and with probably the continued leadership in the House and Senate that we have today. The Clinton-Gore administration has stood up, veto pin, used its threat of a veto to beat back hundreds, literally hundreds of anti-environmental riders. Now, even with that, some of them slipped through and they did some damage. But without that threat, without somebody who's willing to stand up and veto these anti-environmental riders, what will the consequences be? I mean, these are real choices. And while I might enjoy a moment to think about the absolute ideal and the perfect world where nobody ever did a wrong thing on the environment, that's not going to face us.
Tim Hermack.
Unfortunately, Al Gore's book was great. We all read the book. We all loved it. But we've hated the movie. And if it was just the D.C. insiders, they would say the movie is fine with them. They keep cutting the baby in half, settling for crumbs. And this argument is painful for me to hear, that we should be so frightened of one of the candidates that we don't vote for an honest candidate, and that we would have to lie for a Al Gore to get people to vote for him in the false claim that he's at all good on the environment. He has never once stood up for the environment over a corporate contributor.
Tim, that is
toxic,
just
going back
not
to the toxic
true.
Waste incinerator again. They
Tim, you
wrote
come up
it
with
down.
One
they
toxic
promised
waste
to block
incinerator
it.
That you
they
can
said
find.
They would block it. They didn't. And now children in East Liverpool are getting cancer from toxics, lead, mercury, dioxins,
and right
heavy metals.
I believe that Al Gore is trying to do something about that exact
baloney.
Debbie Cease, let me ask you a question about that. That went on for 4 years, and the person who has made that most famous is Terry Swearingen, who is the mother whose child is at the school right next to the incinerator. And she makes a very forceful case saying that Al Gore actually came out to the incinerator right before the second election and said, we will close this plant. It is my promise as a first act of a second administration. And they never did. And she got arrested repeatedly at the White House back in Ohio. And she has dogged his campaign. And now last Friday night, the EPA has announced they'll close it for 6 months to investigate, or they recommend closing it. But she, Terry Swearingen, who's become a well-known environmentalist around this country, continually says he personally promised, and this embodies Al Gore's hypocrisy. What is your response to that?
Well, I think my response to that is that I believe that plant should be closed, too, and I am glad that even though it may be viewed as a day late and a dollar short, that it's finally happening. But I also have very personal recollections of watching Al Gore's response to the plea of another mother, a woman named Maureen Dammitz, whose son Kyle suffers from asthma. And the industry put up a multi-million dollar campaign to try and peel back the new regulations for soot and smog that EPA was putting forward. And I happen to know that Al Gore personally weighed in time and time and time again to keep those regs strong, to keep them from being modified, to keep them from being weakened. And in fact, Kyle Dammitz is going to be able to breathe easier because of those regs, unless the Supreme Court manages to overturn these regs. And as your earlier guest noted, it's been a 5-4 decision on a lot of environmental cases.
Tim Hermack, I want to end on the question of George Bush. That is, while you talked about all that Al Gore has done and betrayed, this issue of whether Bush ultimately is equivalent to Gore if he came into office.
Yeah, I think George Bush Jr. is equivalent to Reagan and Bush. And I know we fought them. We blocked them from doing a lot of things. We blocked them from doing NAFTA, GATT, WTO. They wouldn't have even thought of trying to end welfare as we know it, let alone we wouldn't have let them get away with it. So this whole thing about George Bush, he comes out straight out in front of you and tells you he's going to cut all the national forests down and he's going to open up ANWR, the oil drilling, or at least 6% of it. But the question is Al Gore sold off the Southern California oil reserve and the largest privatization of federal assets in our country's history to a company, Occidental Petroleum, that his family has an ownership in or an investment. He's the one that opened up the Naval Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, 29 million acres in the same year, and 2,000 miles of South Coast Alaska to the oil industry. Now, George Bush can't be any worse than that. These environmental groups that are so much a part of the Democratic Party that you can call them the well-trained lapdogs of the party that's increasingly under the DLC's leadership, behaving more and more Republican. We have an ever-growing new Republican version of the Democratic Party. Gore and Lieberman are the most conservative ticket we've seen in the Democratic Party in 50 years. How can I compare George Bush to that? George Bush is an avowed stating that he will try and do things that we don't like. Even the Republican voters don't like much of what he's saying as regards to the environment. He won't have a prayer of getting it through even the moderate Republicans in the Congress, let alone our Democrats. And my confident belief is that if Nader makes a strong showing, the House will go back to the Democratic Party.
On that note,
if we leave it with Gore and Bush, it'll be the lowest voter turnout again in history.
Tim Hermack, I want to thank you from the Native Forest Council and Debbie Cease of the Sierra Club for being with us. And, of course, in the end, the people will decide. And we urge you to call into our comment line and let us know what you think. 212-209-2999. 212-209-2999. We'll play those comments. I'm Amy Goodman with Jillian Aldrich and Sidrock Franklin, deep appreciation, and as well, Matthew Finch. Thanks for listening.